Welcome to the Finance Path Podcast, where we discuss all your burning questions relating to money, property, and investment for every stage of life. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Attard and Chris Collard.
Okay, welcome listeners to another episode of Money, Property and You. You're with me again, Mark Attard from Finance Path, and today I thought we'd change tact a little bit, and being in the midst of Mental Health Week, I thought we would tackle the subject of financial stress. There's a number of ongoing studies that are carried out throughout the world and here in Australia. The Australian Psychological Society runs one, and Relationships Australia also do surveys on the health, the mental health of the nation. And one of the common themes that runs through is that financial stress is the most common cause of anxiety and sometimes depression in Australians. And I know from the business that we're in, we see it firsthand as well, especially among men who are really struggling to make ends meet. And it might be not necessarily earning the bucks, but being able to get the balance right between being there for their family emotionally and physically, as well as being able to provide for them financially. So today I'm really looking forward to having a chat with Jackie Wyford. Now, Jackie's a leadership and business coach with a vast amount of experience dealing with individuals from all types of backgrounds, so the wealthy and the not so wealthy. And she's also got a really powerful personal story and experiences when it comes to mental health. So off the back of that big pump up, I'd like to welcome Jackie Wyford. How are you, Jackie?
I'm really well, thanks, Mark. Great to be talking to you.
No pressure at all. Have I pumped you up sufficiently enough there?
Yes.
Now, I've given the listeners, that's a really brief overview of a really interesting background of yours. So before we get into some of the detail around how to cope with financial stress and anxiety, can you share with our listeners some of your personal story and how it's led you to be doing what you do?
I've got quite a few personal stories, so I'll just stick with the one that's had the biggest impact on me sort of in my financially and around, and why I created like a money mindset program and things like that. So originally I was born in rural New South Wales in a small town of a few thousand people, which is fabulous. Grew up on the farm with my parents, and I've got two brothers. I was also fortunate at the age of around about 11, my mother made and my dad made a very wise decision not to buy more land, and they bought a local business. So I seen firsthand, you know, how farmers survive getting potentially one or two lots of income in, and how to manage that money and the stress that that had on them. And I know that plays a big part in a lot of, you know, depression and suicide, which is what we're sort of covering, financial pressure. The statistics are about one every 4 days farmers loses their life to suicide, which is, we actually look at it, it's probably higher because that's just the farmer's statistical and not, you know, probably their spouses and things like that. So I've seen firsthand the impact that that has on farmers, and I've also then on the business side of things, my mum ran a ladies' fashion and accessory store. So from the age of 11, I seen the local community of potentially who you thought had money and who you thought didn't have money was really interesting when it came to paying the bills. So we would have lots of problems with some of the locals that had the big houses, the big cars, wore designer, you know, you name it, would struggle to pay the bills. In fact, sometimes you had to get the sheriff in to pay it. Whereas the people that people classified as the not as high in society, shall we say?
Yep.
I'm not very good at judging or classifying people. It's one thing I sort of struggle to do because I think we're all equal. But in this category, the lower economy class, if that's what you want to call it, were often criticised or judged, and yet they were some of the best payers. And if anything, they were some of the ones that were the backbone of the businesses, because they would pay every week or every fortnight when they got their pension, their paycheck, whatever it was. So I learned at a young age is to do not judge a book by its cover. Perceptions are, you know, a lie, and that the people that you thought had money necessarily don't have money. So, and that goes into also the people that you think are happy aren't generally happy. You need to look beyond that smoke screen and, you know, really to see the real reality behind that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point that you bring up around perceptions and our thoughts or beliefs around, you know, who has money and who hasn't got money. And again, I suppose that link between money and happiness as well too, which is a whole, I suppose, other topic about being sort of true to yourself. So you've also had a really great background in your professional career working within financial institutions as well. So dealing with people from all different backgrounds, so again the wealthy and the not so wealthy. Can you share any stories or insights into what you learnt through that period of time?
Yes, definitely. So I started working in a financial institution when I was a financial company, let's say.
Yep.
When I was 18, I remember it very clearly, and let's just say I had pretty close to 25 years things like diploma of financial plannings and, you know, bits and pieces like that. So I've got some few qualifications under my belt to have some conversation around finances. And I started managing, I worked in a branch, so I looked seen all sorts of things. And then I worked in the high net worth, so in the ultra high net worth space, where you needed to have the minimum of certain income and assets to be eligible to be looked after by me. And what I noticed is some of the what we would call ultra wealthy people that had massive balance sheets, and I've seen people with 100 million balance sheets, and I've seen people with negative balance sheets, is that when you get to a certain level, there is sort of contentment around your finances. I've only found that at a very high level, because there was a lot of generosity there. So my belief around is that it's all tied in with that. What I've found is, though, the people in the middle, which I would classify as probably 70%, and I don't have the exact statistics of it, but a large proportion of our society, they were the ones that financially struggled. They weren't poor, if you want to say they're earning more than, you know, the minimum income, yet they're not earning excessive amounts. But when I say that, I mean, some of these people are earning $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, yet they're still struggling. And they're struggling more than sometimes what people are earning at $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And I think the secret is understanding who you are, what your values and beliefs around, what your standards are, and living within your means.
Yeah, it's really interesting that you mentioned that, because we often talk and see firsthand as well in terms of who are the great money managers and who aren't so great at managing their money. It's normally the ones that are on the lower incomes that are forced to not necessarily just count the pennies, but just pay more attention to it. And I think we're a nation which, you know, 99% of the population we experience spend what they earn. So again, you know, this concept around suffering from financial stress or anxiety, regardless of what you earn, is something that I'm looking forward to delving down a little bit deeper in with you. So what are the first signs in your experience that someone may be struggling or suffering from financial stress?
On a behavioural side, is for the people around them, it would be have a look at if any of their behaviour has changed in any way, and whether that's an irritation in they can't sit still, or whether they're depending on, I do some different profiling based on the extended dispersion. So if you sort of categorised people even into like four quadrants type, like that particular profile does, it can really highlight. So if you've got someone that normally is talkative that becomes really withdrawn, if you've got somebody that is generally a happy life of the party, but they come more talkative and more about themselves, that's them under a stressful situation. So, you know, it might make it all, everything is about me, so they're becoming unresourceful.
Mm.
They do things like they may become more aggressive or pressured. It's like I use the analogy in coaching, is that if you hold a balloon in the water in a pool, so if you've got like a balloon or a beach ball and you're holding in the water, the pressure on that, eventually it's going to pop up.
Mm. And that will, and that behaviour will, regardless of personality type, is what you're saying, the behaviour that someone will exhibit will normally be out of character with what their normal behaviour type is, yeah?
Yeah, it is. You can get people that are quite withdrawn, withdrawn, or, you know, introverts as such, but they will become quite withdrawn. They will they'll become more of aloof. So you'll have people that will be more talkative. You'll have, you'll see it in their behaviour if you actually watch. So we often spend our life being busy, 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 and we're not really observing and communicating effectively with the other people that, we're engaged with.
Mm.
Most of our conversations are about ourselves and not the other person.
Mm.
So when we have this "Are you okay?" conversation around depression and anxiety, it really is "Are you okay?" And that's the first thing that you have to say and ask more. There's a lot more to it than that. Let's move on. That's not how it's done. "Are you okay? You know, tell me about your family. Tell me about what's going on." Ask those questions and listen. So the better, you know, you need to, what the saying is, we have two ears and one mouth for a reason. And it comes with financial pressure as well. So, and as you said, the statistics are, I believe, a lot of drugs, alcohol, third-party relationships, let's call them, and abuse, suicide, depression comes from financial pressure. From my experience, that's, you know, I strongly believe that.
Yeah.
So by looking in ways of what are they doing differently? Are they having, they never used to drink through the week, because alcohol, drugs, and even other people are what we call numbers.
So it's an escape.
Yeah, they're numbing their reality because they're not sure of what to do, who to talk to. The uncertainty is within them and they can't cope with that uncertainty. So they numb it. So whether it's drinking, whether it's smoking, whether it's food, you name it, there's a numbing effect. So have a look for any obvious signs. Are they losing weight? Are they, you know, even things like that, putting weight on? Are they smoking more or less, or taking it up? Hopefully they've given it up. Are they drinking where they normally wouldn't drink? Are they getting intoxicated when they normally, that's out of character? Are they really, really talkative? Are they withdrawn? Are they becoming aggressive? Are they becoming short-tempered?
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I think you mentioned it at the start, actually taking the time to ask and observe and look outside of ourselves is one of the biggest challenges, I dare say, because I maintain that time pressure is one of the biggest pressures that we as a society are suffering, and it's part of the reason why a lot of people don't necessarily, we see, spend enough time focusing on their financial health. So in your experience, what's the first thing that someone that may be suffering it, or, yeah, well, let's talk about the person that's suffering from potential, you know, stress or anxiety, what should they do?
Seek some sort of assistance, whether they engage a, you know, someone in the finance world, if it's purely financial, if they're not sure how to cope with it, you know, seek someone like myself that can help them. They're psychologists, and there's numerous people out there that can help them. Your local doctor can help them. You know, go to someone that, the only thing I will say though is be careful who you go to. Talk to anyone, yes, but when it comes to financial advice, get that from the next expert, because there's plenty of people that would love to tell you, "Oh, mate, I did this and it worked," or "Go do this, mate," or this. But if they're not an expert, they don't know your full financial position. Don't take the financial advice from them. Take whatever other advice that they're an expert in. So there's plenty of people out there that will give you advice that make sure whatever you do, if you're going to get some, you know, performance or culture or whatever coaching, go to someone who does that. If you, or go to a psychologist, go to a doctor, and when it comes to your financial plan, go to someone who's qualified financial plan that you have the same values as. Just don't take advice from anyone, because I've found that's potentially where a lot of the financial pressures come from. They haven't sought information in the right places.
And a lot of that, Jackie, if I say, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think too many people probably offer that advice up coming from the wrong space. But as you said, like, that, you know, well-meaning families, friends are looking to provide assistance or guidance or help where they possibly can. But as you said, some specialist advice, wherever that reason may be, would no doubt be a better position to come from. So, yeah. So talking to someone and owning up to it, especially as a, and I know as a Australian male, that can be sometimes a bit of a challenge, owning up to the fact that, hey, yeah, there is something that needs to be addressed here and I need to get help.
Yeah, and I really like what you said there, because Australia has a massive problem. They have a couple of massive problems in that, yes, we're a fantastic country and we look after our mates, and but that's a bit of a back-ended slap, because Australians are very egotistical. So we have egos. And we have egos like not like other countries. So we have the tall poppy syndrome, which I've sort of chatted to you previously on. It's real in Australia. It doesn't really go anywhere else. So if you go to another country and you buy a second house, buy a brand new car, or you're doing really well, you've just got, you know, an amazing bonus or whatnot. In Australia, we don't tell people, because then you're a bit of, you're a smart aleck, you know. You don't share those sort of successes. Now, that's a success story. You've just gone in and negotiated to 10 or 20K, or you've got the bonus that you've been waiting for. That's something that you should be able to share with your closest of people. And they should be going, that's awesome. Well done, Mark, you've done this, that's great. But in Australia, we don't do that. We look down on you and we try to ostracize you and push you away. So the tall poppy syndrome is very, very active in Australia, which is unfortunate. So as Australian men, I would love, and Australian everyone, not just men, but everyone, love to see more of acceptance of each other and this, let's let go of judgment. It doesn't matter who earns what, it's what you do with it and who you are as a person. Where Australia is sort of the opposite, you know, they're so happy to sort of knock you down when you can't share your successes. So, you know, they're okay with you getting wealthy, getting a break until you actually get that big break.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I mean, I myself would sit there and go, yep, I hear about it. And I, if we were talking tall poppy syndrome, and would suggest that in various forms throughout my life, I may have observed it, but I would be one of those people that turn around and go, oh, you know, is it really there? Is it really there? But as you're saying, in your experience, it certainly exists. So yeah, we're
not
talking...
Unconscious.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a little bit like our family giving us advice financially, because they love us. They want to do it and they think they're doing the best thing for us. So a lot of our actions, majority of our actions are done from our unconscious, not our conscious. That's why it's so important to understand who you are as an individual, what you value, what your beliefs are around, especially money for the financial world. Because a lot of us grew up in, our grandparents grew up in the Depression. Our parents were children of people that were in the Depression. You eat everything on your plate. Money doesn't grow on trees. You've got to work hard to make a living. All of these sayings, they're in our blood. They're in our neurosystem. So neurologically, in an unconscious level, they're our belief systems.
Yep.
And I often tell us, you know, tell a story around if a Ferrari turns up and, you know, a guy or whoever gets out, say, we'll say the guy gets out and he's got the beautiful suit and the jewels. And in every talk I've done, I'm out there with different business forums, someone always puts their hand up and goes, drug dealer.
It's interesting,
you know,
isn't it? Yeah.
In other words, what do you see when a rich man, drug dealer? Interesting. So what does that tell me about your unconscious beliefs around money? You've got to be a criminal. You've got to do something wrong to be wealthy.
Yeah, yeah, I understand.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very much so.
Pulling the layers away like you would on an onion, so to speak, to really getting down to understanding what your beliefs are around.
Yeah, so you talked about there, firstly, admitting to the fact that there's something that needs to be addressed, looking at your beliefs around money. You talked, and I've heard you speak before around the three R's, around a strategy around tackling, you know, financial stress or anxiety. You want to share or elaborate a little bit more on that with our listeners?
Yes. So the Money Mindset Blueprint program is around you understanding your individual blueprint and modifying if it needs to be modified. If it's okay and you're running good strategies and around the financial strategies and how you make decisions and whatnot, and your mindset or an unconscious level around it, fantastic. Don't really play with it. If you're not, then the three R's is what I teach you is, first of all, you've got to realize it, like we've spoken about. Then you need to reframe it. So if you have a belief around money that money is evil or money doesn't, you know.
Maybe someone that thought that the drug, you know, someone that rocked up in the Lamborghini has the, or the Ferrari is a drug dealer. How would you reframe that belief?
This is what I do. I say, well, that's interesting. What about that man just lost his family and he used all his money up and he bought that Ferrari because, you know, he hasn't got anything else. And now all he has is that Ferrari and that suit because that suit was someone else's. Or it could have been an uncle's or his father's had passed away. You don't know what he's gone without to get to where he's got there. This could be a dying man and his last wish is to drive a Ferrari and wear an Italian suit and take his last dollars out of the bank before he dies. So people sit back and go, oh, I never thought of it like that. And I go, that's right. Because we've got all these, the way we take information in, it goes through all these filter systems, like as if we're gold panning, really. And we make that our reality.
Does that extend then as well too? So say in the situation where someone is feeling overwhelmed about where they sit financially and under stress and anxious, etc., and they have to reframe the questions or even their feelings about their current position?
Yeah, well, overwhelm is a feeling. The one thing in life we can control is our feelings, is our emotions. So overwhelm, you do overwhelm. You don't have overwhelm. So overwhelm to me is like, you know, depression can be worrying about the past and anxiety and overwhelm around the future. So to overcome overwhelm, it's... you just need to take stock of where you are now and simplify things. Overwhelm is just too big of a picture you're looking at and you just don't know what your first step is.
Yeah.
You know, like how do you run a marathon? You know, there's so many strategies within running a marathon. It's not just I'm going to get out there and go full pelt. There's a strategy around it. You know, the whole 42Ks is a strategy.
And so would it start with asking some better questions about where you're actually at to yourself?
Well, it's confusion, and I would say reframe. Oh, I'm overwhelmed around this, and I actually would get you to reframe that sentence to start with, because you're making this up. You're making overwhelm up because you're confused. So why not say, I'm confused around my financial position at the moment. Now, confusion means to me is, well, if I'm confused, then there's questions, and if there's questions, there's got to be answers. So if there's, you know, answers, then we have a solution. Okay, so confusion isn't that bad. Overwhelm is like, whoa, where do you go with overwhelm? There's no real logical way to talk yourself out of overwhelm. So, or you can say, look, there's a few gaps I've got. I don't have all the knowledge now around my financial position. I need to seek some assistance. It's however you reframe something is however you will believe it, and that becomes your reality. Then your reality will determine the behaviour and the actions that you take next, which determines your results.
Okay, so that reframing is a really... Yeah, it's a massive part. And having the skill and the ability to reframe things in your own head, whether you verbalise it via questions, etc., is something that you obviously do with people a lot.
A lot. Well, there's some different statistics out there to say that we range from anything from 12,000 up to 60,000, 70,000, some even 80,000, some of the studies that I've read, on how many thoughts a day we have per day. Even if we said we had 50,000 thoughts per day, that's like, you know, ouch, almost.
Yeah.
So I say to people, most of them are reoccurring and a lot of them are negative and aren't empowering, so they're disempowering thoughts. So what if we just reframed a few of those? Just focus, pick a couple out that you keep telling yourself and reframe those. And because we're in a money forum, reframe those. Well, when you go to a shop, what are you telling yourself about your money habits? You know, I can't afford that. Well, if you can't afford that, that's what's going to happen. You can't afford it. Or, you know, are you attracted? You will only buy things if they're half price or on sale. What does that say about you? Because money is a reflection of your value of yourself as well. And I think I mentioned this previously. It's about net worth. And when I talk about net worth with clients, it used to be around their net worth on their balance sheet and financial returns. Now it's their net worth of them on an internal way. So how do they see themselves? How do they value themselves? So reflection can be when the way you want to spend your money or your what you want to buy is a pretty big reflection. Like I could, you know, you can unpack people pretty quickly when you watch and listen to them, because it's all a reflection of your internal self.
That's a whole nother podcast, and that would be fascinating to delve down a little bit deeper on that, and that extension of someone's money mindset and their belief system about themselves, because that at the end of the day is at the core of a lot of what we're talking about, I dare say.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's the seeds that are planted when we're even, you know, as young as three, that grow inside of us for the rest of our lives.
So the third R. So we've got reframing. So yep. we're accepting.
We realise we have a problem. We've reframed it. So we reframe whether it's verbal or whether it's we just thoughts, reframe our emotions and how we perceive the situation, and then we just recreate it. And recreate it can be language, actions. Recreate it can be, this is my current financial plan, which I would suspect, like most businesses don't have a business plan and most people don't have a financial plan, which is nuts. How will you ever achieve anything if you don't have a plan? So you go and get a plan, get something, go to your local, you know, can be even if you want to set up saving systems, go to the local bank and get a separate account and start, you know, your spending and your, you know, your income and your spending. Go to a financial planner and go to someone like yourself that can do a full analysis of where they are at now and where they want to go, and get realistic, even if you're working on your SMART goals. And I set a SMART, big, measurable, attainable, realistic and timely. You know, you've got old SMART goals, and to do that and create, so you recreate where you want to go. So you work out what is your ideal life when it comes to your finances, where do you want to be from now to 12 months to 5 years, 10 years to retirement, depending on how long you've got for retirement. What is realistic? And create that plan that is suitable for you as an individual or as a family, whether there's two in the family, whether there's children, whatever it is. So reframe it, realize it, reframe it, and then recreate it. Because you can recreate your reality at any time. You can recreate your financial position at any time. It's not always easy, but there is steps that you can follow, and there's advice that you can get, and you can create whatever wealth you want to create.
Yeah, and that's one of the biggest ones that we, when we sit down with somebody to start with, yep, they might be coming in to see us because they're looking to purchase a home or restructure some debt. But what we really talk to people about is, firstly, getting clarity over their current financial position. And sometimes that's confronting, but when you can get past that confronting part, it's really empowering. And as you said, that's the starting point and allows you to set better goals. And then I suppose our responsibility, or somebody else's in this space, that specialist that's helping people in this area of their life, their job is to help them stay accountable to what they want to achieve for themselves. There's a lot there. So with those three R's, and I know there's been plenty of lessons that you've taken on board and seen yourself and exhibited or witnessed in others, but is there any one, and I know this is a real, I'm chucking a real hard question over here, but is there any one lesson that you've learned about people and their relationship with money that you could share with our listeners?
Yes, one.
I can see that. I can see the smile on your face. I know there's plenty. It can be more than one.
Oh, look, there's heaps. There's heaps.
And all right, well, let's stick to one.
I'm so passionate about this. You know, it is something I'm so passionate about that I could just, I could talk about this for days.
Yep.
The biggest thing, I think the number one lesson that I've learned with people and their relationship with money is it's a reflection of yourself.
So explain that a little. Yeah, how do you mean?
Yeah, what does that mean is you... This might be a little bit sort of high out there for some people, but you've really got to understand who you are and to your core. So I think later on, we've talked about previously, I think we're going to do potentially another podcast talking about the art of happiness, and it talks around your daily actions, and majority of our happiness comes from what we do on a daily basis. So how we treat ourselves and what we do that's going to propel us forward in life. So the one lesson I would say is really get clarity around who you are as an individual, what you want, even suggesting doing things like, what is your ideal day? What does your ideal life look like? Because most people live from day to day And when it comes financially from paycheck to paycheck, and they don't really have any aspirations or goals. And if you want to live day to day or paycheck to paycheck, that's okay too. If you've got stress and you're agitated or you're confused or, you know, you're not congruent, you're not happy, then you're the only one that can change that. You're the only one that can take action. You can go to a coach. I can't change anyone unless they're prepared to put the work in and do some change themselves. Someone can go to you, Mark, and you can give them the best advice ever, but until they take action and own it, it doesn't matter. So the one thing, if I can sum that up, would be understanding who you are and be committed and take action.
Great. There's some really great lessons in that, guys. It's encouraging, I suppose, from my perspective, especially that some of the messages that you're talking about and some of the actions is what we try to instill within our and share us with our clients as well too. That is a huge one around clarity that we try to discuss and ram home with our clients. Getting clarity, providing empowerment, taking action. And I think another one for us is, and you mentioned it then, not being reactive in life, like being proactive and taking charge. Now, you mentioned a takeaway with the three R's. You mentioned that there's something that our listeners can take away. We're going to post something onto our website. Do you want to just take us through that?
Yeah, so what I'll do is I've got a few notes that I do, and also with my Money Mindset program, that's the program I take people through. Obviously, it's a little bit more than a few minutes, and I'm going to put something together so it's a downloadable document that you can take away. So it's just something extra. It's fantastic to listen to these podcasts, but for me as a coach, I want you to do something. I want you to take action. I want you to actually have an impact. So it's great. I love talking about this, but until you do something, it's just words and it's not actually a difference. And Mark and I are quite passionate about making a difference. So my thought is, if I could add something that can be downloaded and you can take a few little actions to extend your thought process and potentially change one little thing, then I'd be happy with that.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. So what we'll do, listeners, is we'll get that form and we'll post it up on our website. We'll give you some further information about where it hangs. We'll make it sitting front and square on the site so it can't be missed. And what I think would be great is, you talked about money mindset. We'll come back, and also the art of happiness as well. What about if we roll out, because there's a fair bit of detail in both of those, and we run, we'll do another couple of podcasts. The next one, we might focus on money mindset, and then off the back of that, we'll focus on the art of happiness. I've just put you on the spot there. Do you mind doing that?
That's fine. As you know, I'm very passionate about this, and it's just around creating awareness. There's a lot of things that people can do. We're not taught this at school. We're not taught this. We're not educated this. This is, you know, mindset be a program that's put in schools from the age of five.
Agree. You know? Yeah.
Know about this stuff, yet we don't, and it's one of the most powerful, impactful things that you do. So I'm happy to help out, definitely.
Fantastic. So listeners, thanks for joining us. Jackie, thank you very much for your time. It's much appreciated. And as I said, we'll get that form up onto our website, and I encourage you guys to tune into our next one with Jackie, where we're going to be focusing on understanding your money mindset. We touched on it a little bit in that podcast, but it's a really, really important part of, alleviating or forgetting about alleviating financial stress. If you're looking to create some wealth for yourself, you need to start with understanding yourself. So thanks again, Jackie. Look forward to catching up next time.
For more information about this podcast or to ask a burning question, visit www.financepath.com.au/podcasts.